Welcome to The Sensuous, a radical celebration of your inner sensuous creature, your feeling, humming, dancing essence that's throbbing with creative impulse, orgasmic sensitivity, intuitive wisdom, and primal wildness. The part of you that perceives with the whole of your body and is interconnected with all that is. The one who's here to not only live, but be alive. This podcast invites you to re-experience yourself as a vital organ of the greater animate world, relating to your eroticism, pleasure, emotions, and full spectrum humanness as gateways to your own divinity. I'm your guide, Nadine Hamilton, seasoned sexuality coach, somatic practitioner, intimacy educator, and lifelong student. Join me and my guests as we explore the sacred and the profane through a somatic lens, unraveling all things sex, power, mysticism, healing, and conscious relating. This is the call of the sensuous. Do you feel it? Hello, my beautiful loves. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. And you may have noticed, if you've been around for a little while, that we have a brand new name. So after, I think it's been 3 years of being Soul Nectar Podcast, we are now called The Sensuous, and I cannot be more excited about this name. If you listened to the intro of this episode, I speak a little bit about what that word means to me. And one of my deepest intentions for all of my offerings and everything I share and all the work that I do is for us to become so intimate with the human experience, the sensuous world, our body, our emotions, our sensitivity, and owning all of it as perfect and worthy and lovable and divine, instead of thinking that in order to be spiritual or in order to become the best version of ourselves, we have to transcend or we have to intellectualize and live in the mind. No. My work is all about sinking in deeper into the feeling, sensing, human aspect of what we are and reclaiming that as divine, as whole, as connected to our full aliveness and our full potential of who we've come here to be. So that is a little bit behind The Sensuous. I hope you love it as much as I do. And this episode specifically is so special. I got to have a conversation with Moon DeSimone, who is so incredible. And she's one of those spiritual teachers who is also so grounded and so human and just has this big sister, best friend energy and vibe to her that you're going to hear in this conversation. I got to meet her in person, I think it was a couple months ago now, at one of her classes in New York City. And right away, I was like, I need to reach out to this woman and get her on the show because she has so much grounded, beautiful wisdom to share. So Moon DeSimone is a Brazilian-born spiritual teacher, meditation guide, and coach. As a Tibetan Buddhist practitioner for almost a decade, she's also trained in contemplative psychotherapy. Known for her warmth and real talk style, she is everyone's spiritual big sister. She's committed to helping individuals make friends with their minds, heal patterns of unworthiness, and turn their past into creative expression. She believes that no matter what challenges you're facing, they hold value and can serve as fertilizer for your growth and healing. Her methods and offerings are profound yet irreverent, artistic, and accessible, integrated from her lived experiences as an immigrant to modeling in New York City, with extended time in retreats in India, Nepal, and Indonesia. Moon lives in New York City and serves her community through the Modern Dakini House, an online membership for female practitioners, one-on-one coaching, in-person classes, and worldwide retreats. We dove really deep into becoming friends with all parts of yourself and no longer fearing certain aspects of yourself that maybe society has conditioned us to perceive as too bad or sinful or wrong or shameful or dark or twisted or messed up or whatever stories we've created about all of our very human parts and emotions. We talked about cultivating deeper levels of intimacy with yourself, inner child healing, the illusion of control, navigating grief and how to be in relationship with the feeling of grief and also support people in your life and loved ones who are navigating grief. We talked about cultivating true deep presence and self-awareness, the root of your present day reactions and triggers, changing our relationship with our past, and some of Moon's life stories of how she became a spiritual teacher and also her life-changing experience of spending 3 months in meditation in a monastery in Nepal. I'm so excited to share this conversation with you. I hope you enjoy, and definitely feel free to reach out to both of us on Instagram to let us know what you're taking away. All right, my loves, I'll see you on the other side, and I hope you enjoy. So you serve in the world as a spiritual teacher and a meditation guide. I would love to hear just some background on your own story and your own journey. Have you always been so connected to spirituality and meditation? What has that looked like for you?
You know, as I evolve and mature, I feel like I've always been connected to something in the sense of this deep sense of love. I've always, from a very early age, I've always felt very connected to like wanting to love people. I used to feel really sad and really disappointed when I would see, you know, people sad or people crying. You know, I was raised Catholic in Brazil until I was 16, was when I moved to the States, but I never felt very connected to the church or to the all-girls Catholic school that I went. I loved the idea of, it's interesting because I was just telling this to someone, I loved the idea of like people coming together to do something together. So like when there was a moment of like prayer in school, even though I didn't love a lot of the things, I loved the idea that we all came together to do something together. So that was always something that inspired me. But besides that, outside of that, there was always a sense of like, there's more than what meets the eye. I think from a very early age, I always had this deep sense in me that there was like more than what was around. My mom was such an incredible angel, compassionate, like ninja. And the main thing she always said is like, love everyone and treat everyone how you'd like to be treated. So I feel that like that has always been my mantra, my prayer, you know. I grew up with that. So I always felt like there's something good in people, no matter what. And then once, obviously, I became a Buddhist, it was clear to me that that's what I have always felt. But I renounced the church for a very long time, and I renounced any level of, you know, spirituality or anything. I was just, you know, and that rebel in my late teens and 20s, just like, you know, using drugs and alcohol as a way to cope and to really get through things. And it wasn't until I was 28 that my brother actually came back from India for the first time that he went, and he started to just really challenge me and push me. And I was like, what happened to you? You know, we've always been very close, and something had shifted in him after only being away for 6 weeks. And I was at a very pivotal time in my life where I was just feeling very depressed. And like, I would wake up and be like, when am I actually going to start living? You know, I thought I used to have this way of thinking, oh, this is a rehearsal. And I was just numbing and distracting. You know, I had battled with disordered eating for a lot of my 20s, but that was kind of ending. But I was still smoking and drinking. And, you know, I had found acting, which was essentially my first spiritual experience, wasn't an acting class, that I felt like, oh, a deep sense of presence and expression, a deep sense of connection. But it wasn't until I decided that fall in 2014 to go to India and just really see what that was all about, that this life, I guess, this chapter, this way of expressing, I could say, really took shape, you know. And I didn't know anything. I just bought a one-way ticket to India, and I knew that I was going to do an introduction to Buddhism retreat in Bodh Gaya, and that's all I knew. I didn't know the teacher. I didn't know what we were going to be studying. I didn't know anything. But I got there, and I was like, oh, I've arrived wherever it is that I've been seeking my whole life. So yeah, it felt like I had landed somewhere that was really very much like home, in a sense. You know, of course, the teachings were hard and the concepts were big, but there wasn't a lot of me resisting it. to be totally honest. You know, I was a little bit like, okay, that sounds a bit far out. Like, okay, reincarnation, sure. This, see, everyone is your mother. Like some of the things I was like, right. But there was more of me curious because I felt so held, you know, I felt like so much what I've been looking for, I was finding those answers, you know? So that was the beginning. Yeah. It was almost 10 years now that I started this path.
Wow.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing. I resonate so much with that. Like being a little kid growing up in an environment where, well, I wasn't raised Catholic. I was actually raised not really connected to religion or spirituality, but always having this inner sense, even if it was unconscious, that there has to be something more to this. It can't just be this 3D physical reality. There has to be something more. And it sounds like that took a lot of courage and trust to be able to follow that nudge and that inner calling to go on that retreat and to study Buddhism and all of these teachings, even though it was so different than anything you had been exposed to before in this lifetime. So if you like bring yourself back to that moment where you're getting on the flight or you're making that decision to go, what do you think allowed you to trust that call, even though you didn't know exactly what you were getting yourself into? Like, yeah. What did that feel like, that inner knowing of this is what I have to do?
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like there's a bit of like naive. I was a bit naive about what was really taking place. I was more like, well, let's go. You know, there was this adventurous spirit that just took over and it was like, let's go. And there was also a big part of me that I just knew that where I was, I didn't want to be there anymore. Like I was in a dying relationship. I mean, the relationship had been done for over 2 years, but I stayed. I just felt like everything was kind of like rotting inside. And I was just resentful and judgmental and critical. And I didn't really enjoy being around myself, you know what I mean? So I was kind of like, there has to be something else. I just knew for a fact that I didn't want where I was anymore. So it was more like, I just got to jump because I don't think it can get any less fulfilling or engaging. Of course, I was very privileged that I had enough money to just take off and go and be in India for 5 months. You know, I had saved money and did what I had to do to make that happen. And I know it's not the case for everyone. So I had the opportunity to really do something that is very special. And I think also, you know, looking back, there's a part of me that was kind of like, what's the worst that can happen, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because people now ask me, did you feel scared of traveling to India by yourself? Or did you feel, and like, honestly, I never had those thoughts. It's just, I don't know. It wasn't part of my, it's just not, I didn't feel like that. You know, I actually felt so at home in the streets of India and traveling. So I think that, you know, if you were to take this more esoteric view, I really do believe that I have had other lives that I lived there, that it feels like just a coming back, which I felt. It was like a lot of the places that I've been walking, I was just like, it feels new, but at the same time, it feels like I'm returning to a place that I have been. But honestly, I think I was just kind of like, I was a bit ruthless, yeah, a bit naive and a bit like, why not? Let's fucking go. I have no idea what's going to happen, you know, but I just knew that it couldn't go any, I couldn't feel any less like myself than how I was. And that's essentially what drove. Yeah. Yeah. I remember being at JFK and taking a photo of myself with like my passport and like I overpacked to such a degree, you know, just thought, was like Googling blogs back then of like, what you pack and like, what do you bring? And I brought so many unnecessary things and I just started to donate them. But I remember looking at my face and being like, wow, I really did this. There was also a sense of like, if I can make this happen, then I just felt a sense of pride as well that I could decide and make it happen. Something so extraordinary to me at the time, you know,
mm-hmm.
That, you know, if you had told me a few years back, I would have been like, are you okay? No, I never do that, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I can resonate with that also so much. Like there comes these moments where on the outside, yeah, it might seem really scary and terrifying and like, what the hell am I doing? But there's just this inner knowing and also that element of like, fuck it, what do I have to lose?
Yeah.
And the more that you do that, in my experience, the more you trust yourself and you're like, okay, no matter what situation I'm in, I trust myself to figure it out. I trust myself to be okay. I trust myself to, I don't know, find the magic or the lessons or the joy or whatever is the juice and the nectar of this experience that I'm meant to suck out of it. I'm dropping in really quick to let you know that I'm offering a completely free 7-day erotic awakening course called Living Sensuality that you can dive into at any time. Hundreds of people literally have now been through this beautiful 7-day program that guides you through simple yet highly effective 10-minute practices that you can fit into any busy lifestyle and keep coming back to again and again. These powerful explorations will start to ignite your juiciest sensuality, create inner safety in states of pleasure and self-intimacy, become more present and connected to your own body, and bring your innate eroticism and turn on back to life. I found that if you want to live a life of more pleasure and more connection, then that requires intentionally spending more time in pleasure and connection and actually making it a priority. Just like creating space in your life for going to the gym or learning a new language or improving a certain skill set, pleasure and sexuality are also skills that we must actively strengthen if we say we want to experience what's truly available to us within these realms. Living Sensuality makes this so easy and so accessible with juicy practices that, again, are only 10 minutes because I wanted to make sure that you receive the best of the best minus the fluff. So go to bloomwithnadine.com/livingsensuality to get started for free today and join the movement of erotic liberation and ancestral healing. Now back to the episode.
The more we take those risks, the more intimate we actually get with ourselves and with that ability to really be resilient and continue to show up, you know, that those muscles don't get exercised by staying at home and thinking about stuff. It just you do need to physically fully live the moment, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It comes through like putting it in motion and putting yourself out there and taking actions. And I love that you mentioned becoming more intimate with yourself, because something I definitely wanted to ask you about is your experience in the 3-month silent meditation retreat, which not many people can say that they've done that. So could you tell us about that experience? Like, what inspired you to do that? What came up for you? Yeah. Anything you want to share?
Oh, yeah. Just got a full body, full body goosebumps just thinking about it. Yeah. Well, I've known about this retreat ever since I started studying Buddhism, because especially in my lineage, it's kind of like you do, there's a layer, there's a bit of a linear path as far as like you take 10 days and then 1 month and then 3 months. I mean, you do a few 1 month. So I had known about the 3 months for a while. And then it was sometime in the fall of 2021, which now feels like lifetimes ago, I received the email saying, because through COVID they closed, and then they've emailed back and saying, Vajrasattva retreat is back. It will take place in January of 2022. And as soon as I got that email, I was just like, there was something quite instantly that was like, this is the time. Like someplace in me, some unseen force, something that just was like, this is the time. And actually at the time, it made no sense. I was living in Florida. I was still almost full-time caretaking for my mom. She was still going through cancer treatment. But there was something that I was like, it felt completely, quote unquote, unrealistic, but I still entertained the idea and I started to talk about it. And my dad was the first one to say, yeah, you should go. And my mom was like, really? 3 months? Oh my God. And there was still something in me that felt like it was the right time. So I applied, I got in, and I started to prep. And I was like, I'm going to do all the things as if I am going, and then we'll see what happens. And then I did end up going, and it did feel like this. It almost felt as though there was this mountain that I needed to climb, which I did. You know, there was this part of me that was like, I just knew someplace in me that there was something that I absolutely needed to do. And then everything began to conspire in that favor. Like, it was a totally smooth process of planning, organizing, literally being offline for 3 months, not working for 3 months, making sure that my mom had the care that she needed for 3 months. Like, everything was just like into place. And it was literally the hardest thing I've ever done. I mean, besides, you know, surviving the death of my mom, now at the time, that was the hardest thing that I have ever done as far as like devoted intentional practice. It was extremely intense. It was like literally 90 days of practice, no day off, in practice every single day for 8 hours. You know, we fasted every day. The last meal was at 12 o'clock, and then the next meal was at 7:30 for breakfast. So there's a lot of very intense physical, psychological, emotional, and spiritual aspects that were really challenging us to look at our minds, you know. And it was extremely profound, and every day I still have glimpses of some things that are still integrating or that I am remembering. Or now I've started to look back at some of the journals for some of the teachings that I'm bringing into the Dakini House that are related to that practice. And yeah, I mean, I also know, again, how privileged I am to be able to do that, to take that time and to still come back and have a working business, you know, and actually my social media was still there. Everything was still there. It's like, it's also such a test that things change. And at the same time, some things kind of just keep going. But it was profound, you know, touching back on what we said around relying on ourselves. It was the biggest, most profound experience that I had, that I really felt the closest to myself. In the sense of, it was really difficult some days to just sit for that many hours and to do the practices and to look at my mind. And, you know, there were really intense teachings that we had to face, and, you know, reciting 100,000 times this long mantra. There was a lot, you know, and not having the things that I normally do to soothe or to relax.
Mm-hmm.
It's intense, you know, to really see, wow, I have a lot of attachments, just like any other human. And will I be okay without them, you know, and to see my mind with that much space and that much, while holding so much potential because of the practice and because of the teachings, while living in a monastery for 3 months where there were only seven of us that were Westerners. Everyone else were excuse me, monks and nuns that live in the monastery full time. Yeah, absolutely surreal and visceral and otherworldly, really. I remember thinking, is this really happening? And when it ended, I was like, I can't believe I did this. And at the same time, I feel like I'm a new person, or I'm actually more me. You know, I felt like there was like layers and layers of ideas or identifications and concepts that I had, or limitations, really, that I had never really seen up close before. And also to see the potential of the practice and the potential that we have already there. You know, I really was able to glimpse at this insane, magnificent potential that's dormant in all of us. And I was like, oh, it's really there. Because there were moments that I don't have words to describe the things that I experienced, because it is beyond this ordinary rational thinking mind, as you know. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's one of those experiences that I will never forget. You know, it's one of those things that in somehow, some way, it was preparing me for what I had to, for what I went through this year. And yeah, it was extraordinary and profound and life-changing, really. Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds like it. Oh my God. That is so incredible. The most that I've done are the 10-day Vipassana retreats. And even that is so deep and so profound and transformative and all of the things, you can't even put it into words. So I can only imagine 3 entire months in silence, in meditation. And you probably resonate with this, but I feel like so much of what has allowed me to become the person that I've become is no longer being afraid of sitting with myself. I'm not afraid of anything that's within me, because I've gone to those depths, whether it's certain thoughts or emotions or feelings. Like, when you can be with it, then you realize that the path to actualization. It's not necessarily about eliminating any part of yourself. It's your ability to be with anything that comes up and to feel yourself as the infinite eternal consciousness that is holding it all and aware of it all, and not the emotion or the thought itself.
Yeah, precisely. And I mean, you just said it in such beautiful, exact words. What I also, you know, there was majority of silence, but we were reciting mantras and like studying texts. So of course it was silence, mm-hmm. as in like there was no conversation, but I was hearing myself read the text and say the mantras. But it was also extremely fascinating to, like you said, she recognized like there is really space around everything. I just have to remember, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like the space is not something I have to go out and get, you know, the space to work with what's there is there. I just have to remember, oh, wow, here's what's happening. And here's who I really am. I am the space around it all. Mm-hmm. That was pretty next level that I could feel like I could really. And the premises of this specific practice, of this specific teaching, I mean, this specific retreat was around changing our relationship with our past. It's a purification retreat. So we were asked every single day, 4 times a day the teachings is to look back and experience a genuine, sustainable and healthy sense of remorse. You know, I think for us in the West, remorse and regret gets so messy and strange, but from a Buddhist perspective, it's extremely valuable. And it's more mm-hmm. around you look at your past and you begin to change how you relate with it so that it impacts you differently. You know, so I had to go to every single part of my being and go to places that I didn't even know were there, like literally feel like I think I'm losing my mind, you know, that I'm crying and I'm screaming and I'm dancing and I'm laughing and I'm like hearing things I'm not hearing things. And it was like, because there's so much literally being shifted, transformed and liberated within my mind that I didn't know because of that amount of space, you know. And like you said, there's something so profound in just being okay with whatever's there, you know, and I really did go to places that I used to hold a lot of shame, that I used to hold a lot of guilt, that I, you know, deep, 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 quote unquote, dark, dark secrets that I have never told anyone, that I didn't even want to know I had done or I had thought or I had accepted, but they were there hidden in those deep, deep little corners of my mind. And the practice was go there, bring it up, bring it up, bring it forward. Let's look at it. Let's rewrite it. Let's hold it differently. Let's change how it's impacting you, because that had been keeping me limited. And to do that and still be there, you know what I mean? And still be okay is the revolutionary aspect of like going to the places that scare you, which is, you know, the main teachings of Adakini and the highest tantric teachings from Buddhist perspective. You just go there, you know, everything really is your practice. It's not like, here's my practice when I'm seated, or here's my practice when I'm doing this. No, your life, everything you think, say, and do, and experience is for you as a means for you to exercise. So yeah, I keep thinking about other ways to describe the experience and to find other words. And I'm like, this is all, this is it. And you know, yeah.
No words. Yeah. And everything that you just said, like, completely goes against how we're usually conditioned, at least in the US. It's like when it comes to big feelings and big emotions, we're taught to suppress it and hide it away or distract ourselves, numb ourselves. And there's like this terror of being crazy or being hysterical or having, quote unquote, bad thoughts. We're so terrified of what lives within us that we deny it and reject it. Mm. And therefore we're just feeding it more energy and giving it more power over us. So when we have the courage and the trust to just be present with it and go into those corners, I've found that it no longer controls us. And we're like, okay, this is here. This lives within me and it lives within the entire collective human field, and that's okay. It doesn't make me a bad person.
Yeah. And what I find, I mean, 100%, and what I find that is a misconception is that people think that when I become ABC, then I'll be able to go to this place, or when I have this and this and that, or when I have the space, or when I feel strong. But the kind of a mind fuck is that you get stronger by going to this places. You feel more resilient and more trusting by going through the mud, you know, to just go head on. I mean, it's going to stay there. And it takes different shapes until we go and we really face it. And I think, you know, the more I think about this stuff, which is obviously essentially all I do, is like, I think we're just really scared of not knowing, you know, that's mm-hmm. what I keep coming back to. Because like my client the other day was just like, why do you think we do that? And I'm like, I think at the root of it, we're just really scared of not knowing what it will be. We have this illusion of control. If we hide it or if we keep doing what we're used to, then we know what's going to happen. But it's actually not even true because we never really know. Mm-hmm. And it's quite sad, actually, wouldn't you say, that it's kind of like we undermine our capacity so much because mm-hmm. we think we can't. We really do. There's such big parts of us that really believe that we're not capable or that we can't. And obviously, we know where these parts come from. And it's like old wounds. And obviously, we know we've all had them. And it does sadden me deeply to think that there's some people suffering so, so much that they can't even glimpse that there is this potential there. Like that always kind of catches me. And I'm like, wow, yeah. As much as there is a way for everyone, it may not be the time for everyone, you know? And that's something that paradoxical sadness, it's like the horrible beauty of life, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So well said. Yeah. For me, like when we're going into those depths of like darkness or ugliness or trauma or emotion or something that's been societally unacceptable and you've been so terrified of going there, I've found that like it's so important, yes, to feel it and lean in and become intimate with it while also at the same time holding a sense of presence and mm-hmm. holding a sense of awareness and not getting sucked into it. And something else that came up is I love that conversation so much around the topic of being so afraid of the unknown and the mystery and so deeply like associating our sense of security and safety and survival with total control mm-hmm. and hanging on and grasping for dear life. And I've sat with that a lot. And I feel like I'm sure it comes from so many things, but I feel like collectively it also really comes from our fear of the feminine, which of course is just a word or a label of such a huge energy and archetype. But to me, the feminine is like dark and mysterious and unknown and emotional and intuitive, sensitive. And again, we've been taught to associate our safety, our success, our sense of self with like how much can we know? How much can we rationalize and intellectualize and control everything around us?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great way to put it, actually, especially in this patriarchal society. I almost feel, yes, I actually agree. And I also feel like, yeah, I mean, yes, we do need a sense of like, it's like we need to know that we are, like Jack Kornfield says, we need to know that we are a fruit salad before we become a smoothie, you know, so we do need to know that here's a contrast of like where we've been and where we're going or what is needed. And at the same time, I think that what I keep coming back to is like we've just been conditioned to identify with the parts of us that really think we are less than, you know. Mm. Which then leads to thinking we need this to be enough or we need to do. And the freedom and the mystery is like, oh, I don't know what that is. I haven't identified with that. That feels too out there. So let me just stick with what's familiar. You know, I think that we just have this. And it's actually so sad. Again, I think it's sad. It's just sad to do this because it is. But I really do believe it's like just a lot of really wounded inner children in everyone. Mm. You know?
Yeah.
Because like if we all took the time to tend to those inner child, all the inner children within us, because they're the ones holding tight for dear life to the ways things were, to feel safe and to feel headed, to feel validated, to feel held and validated or holding on to a story or how they internalized an experience. If we all took the time to tend to that, then we would feel more confident and more self-assured based on who we really are. And then there'll be less of us needing to hold on to this illusion of control, to feel safe, which we're actually not safe, but then just creates more suffering, more separation. And, you know, it's so funny because up until like, I have to be totally honest, up until like 3-4 years ago, Well, yeah, 4 years ago, because it started when I went back to Florida to be with my mom. I used to totally overlook inner child practice. I was focusing on everything else, you know, and I was focusing on like developing what really is my true loving awareness. But I used to just think like, I don't have to go there. And I think that there's still a lot of people that bypass that because, again, it's so uncomfortable. And we have to take responsibility, and we can't sit here blaming mommy, daddy, and society. We have to say, well, yeah, it was shitty, and this is what's in front of me. This is my history, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think some people are just not ready, and that's also okay. You know, I have to keep reminding myself of that. I think that little right is going to be like, let's fucking go. And it's like, no, Moon, maybe it's not the time for some people, and that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. I always say, like, even though my work, my niche, my focus, and my private practice is around sex and intimacy and pleasure, mm-hmm. I would say like 99% of my sessions, the inner child comes up.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm not sure if I've ever had a session with a client where the inner child didn't come up, because that, like, when you pull back the layers and layers and layers, there's, I don't want to say always, but in my experience, almost always an inner child within you that is scared shitless of being abandoned or being judged, not being accepted, not being loved. Like, that is at the root of so many issues where we focus on the surface level and we don't realize it's this part of us that literally just wants to be seen and loved and validated and heard.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also think it comes back to what we said before. It's like, it requires a lot of intimacy with yourself, you know? We're not saying, hey, go outside or take that pill or do that thing or go on that thing. It's like, you got to really be with yourself. Like, no one can do the inner child work for you. Like, not even the divine can do that reparenting. It's like, you have to do it. And I also feel like that requires a deep sense of responsibility as well for you to just say, yeah, a lot of stuff didn't go as I wish, but what can I do now? Work with it. You know, you can't change the past. Yeah. I keep trying to find ways to translate this in other ways for people to be more excited to do this work. So this, I'm excited that we're talking about this, because I'm often, sometimes I say inner child, people are like, you know, they instantly kind of get a little like, oh, I don't want to go there. Oh my God, childhood. Oh, you have no idea. So I keep trying to find other ways to just say the younger parts of you, you know what I mean? Or like aspects of you that need tending to. But I'm hoping that more and more people are recognizing that that's essentially, you know, where the puzzle starts, if you will. Mm-hmm. There isn't a way to know the root, the start of anything, because it's like lifetimes and the tendencies and everything's so layered and complex. But a lot of the puzzle began to take shape then. 100%. I agree with you. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I couldn't agree more. And yes, like, our inner child is connected to so much pain and wounding and conditioning. And also, it's so connected to our essence, our purpose, our gifts, our expression, creativity, imagination. Like, there's so much potential and so much energy there. And if someone like wants to deepen their either ongoing practice of connecting with their inner child, or maybe they've never done this work before, what could that look like? Like, how could someone start to connect with their inner child?
A great question. I mean, you know, it's a lifelong practice, first of all, as you know. But what I would say first thing is to become aware of, it's like, I think instead of like going to the inner child first, to kind of backtrack from like, what is it that you're reacting to right now? You know, like, you get to know what's taking place in your inner world by how you react. Like, what's annoying you? What do you feel resentful towards? Like, what is it that you're reactive to on your day-to-day life? And then you begin to pull back to like, okay, what are the narratives? What are the beliefs? What are the parts? Oh, where were those parts essentially coming from, the inner child? And like, it's more, and it's also like, obviously, and then amidst all of that, like, what are the emotions that they're holding? And the other aspect that I keep reminding, I mean, everyone I talk to, is like, start to look at the ways in which you felt validated when you were a kid. Like, look at that. Like, what were the ways that you felt validated, that you felt seen, that you felt approved, that you felt loved in the family dynamics, in your house, in your school, or with your caretakers, you know? Because then you get to see, it's like, for example, as much as I experienced immense unconditional love from my parents, it was very clear that I was very much loved and approved more when I was taking care of my brothers, when I was the nice girl, when I didn't cause any trouble, when I literally kept it all together and was an adult when I was 7 years old. It wasn't an intentional thing. It was just what was needed around me. And I just really internalized that as like, okay, when I'm the good girl, I'm loved, I'm validated. So that transformed in the people pleasing tendencies, the aspects of me hiding my needs. Let me shape shift and be a chameleon so that I fit and so that everyone around me feels safe. And this all tracks back to the inner child, but these were patterns and tendencies and beliefs that I've acted out my entire life, and they still flare up from time to time. And now I get to be tender to that little girl that's still in there being like, but wait, I thought that that's what we needed to do to feel loved. And I get to come in and say, no, you are loved and approved and validated, period, simply because you exist. And it's also so fascinating to accept that it's so humbling to stay on this path, because new experiences will trigger different aspects of what we need to see. You know, like, I feel pretty stable in my practice. I have, you know, I can rely on myself. But for example, now I've started to date again. I think I mentioned this on the class you came. I've started to date again, and I had been celibate for 5 years. So dating was like, whoa, a whole new world. So here, all these younger parts taking over, the wanting to take over the show, just because it's something new, just because it's something extremely vulnerable, just because I'm feeling uncomfortable. So it's not like bad. It's just I'm putting myself in new situations, which is just part of being a human and evolving. We should obviously be doing new things and growing. So that's when they continue to come up and need our tending, you know? And it's humbling to be like, oh, wow, I'm 38. I've been doing these practices for 10 years and I feel like I'm 13 when I go on a date. It's actually so kind of like sweet. And instead of me being mad at myself, which I sometimes catch myself being, I get to be tender and loving, because that is the part that's feeling uncomfortable. Not me, the adult one, right? It's just the little girl in me being like, it's all so new and I don't know what's happening and it's uncomfortable. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And like, there's so much to be said about the inner child and just early childhood development in general. And the more that I've learned about it, honestly, I've had so many moments of being like, how has human evolution not caught up already in a way? Like, oh my, yeah. From the ages of 0 to 7 and even older, literally everything around us, all the messaging, like we're being molded and shaped to have this outlook and perspective that usually is not serving us to the best of its ability. And like, we are receiving the messaging from our parents and the media and our schools as absolute truth, and thinking like, oh, if I do this, or if I reveal this part of myself, if I'm seen in this certain way, then I'm not going to receive love and I'm not going to be worthy. And again, I've had these moments of like, God, why are humans designed like this? Like, why are we so fucked up? And then I have these moments of, maybe we forget so that we have the opportunity to remember. maybe we stray so far from our inner knowing and trust in our lovability and our worth and our beauty and our divinity so that we can have the hero's journey of coming back to that. Yeah, that's something I've been sitting with. And another thing that I wrote down is, I love how you started off that response when you said that, like, to connect with your inner child, just start noticing what is coming up for you already in your current reality. For a long time, I was stuck in like thinking that I need to actively scour and seek out, oh, I need to heal this, I need to heal this. And now I have this deep trust that whatever needs to be integrated or looked at, it's going to come up. I don't have to search for it. Life is going to show it to me in any situation. And it's going to be a fractal of something bigger. Like, anything that comes up, any emotion or trigger can be a string that you pull on, and it will naturally reveal so much deeper than that.
I mean, I couldn't agree more. And I think for a person to be able to recognize that you have to be present, you know, like the ultimate spiritual practice is actually being fully present, because otherwise we're just reacting. We think, oh, that's just what I do. I just get annoyed at 6 p.m. on a Thursday because I'm hungry. It's like, no, what is going on in this unique individual moment that needs you? And we have to be. Sometimes people are like, oh, it's so exhausting. And I was like, it's exhausting in the beginning because you're relearning a whole new way to be with yourself. But the more we do, it's actually way more regenerative to be present, because you waste less energy from being distracted and just like wandering, you know, like mind wandering is so exhausting, scrolling and this and that. It's like, if you can just be here again, extremely uncomfortable and vulnerable because we don't know what's going to happen. If we just keep doing the things that we're used to doing, there's a part of us that thinks we know what's going to happen. So we're holding on to assuming that, oh, when I go on TikTok, this is how I feel. So let me go on TikTok. Or when I call this friend and we gossip about everybody else, then this is how I feel. So we keep doing the things because we assume we're going to receive the same feedback, which we end up because that's exactly what we're assuming. But being extremely present requires a sense of like, well, again, that vulnerability to just be like, I'm going to just be here and be with myself. Again, that ultimate reliance on ourselves, like we said from the beginning, to then watch and be like, okay, and not put yourself down because you're noticing a lot of reactions or a lot of judgment, but watch it. It's like, if we can all just watch our minds as if we're watching a movie that we're curious to understand, to work with, it would be so much more spacious and compassionate instead of like, I'm those negative thoughts. Oh my God, I'm so bad because I just judged that person. No, that was a passing thought that was judgmental towards that person. You know, but that requires, again, knowing that your true essence is always there. You know, I feel hopeful. I mean, I always am hopeful. Of course, some days I'm like, oh my God, there's no way. Sometimes I'm like, oh my God, we're too far down. But, you know, it also helped me to. And I wanted to just touch on something that you said. I do believe that we choose these curriculums and we come here as a means to experience life, to see how it's almost like, what are the many different ways in which we can experience ABC to get back to our truth. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Obviously, it doesn't make sense. Again, it is messy. Absolutely. That's the human experience. You know, this is it. And like navigating that, we have this immense potential while we're navigating with the personality, and just accepting that that dance is part of it will lessen the grip of wanting things to be perfect or just holding tightly because we think things are terrible. Those two extremes also don't work, you know? Mm-hmm.
Totally. And I see it as if something is coming up in you, you are in the universe. You are a part of this universe. You are a part of this collective creation. So if it's coming up in you, what makes you think that you as an individual are wrong and bad and broken and sinful? Mm-hmm. If it exists in you, it exists in the universe. Like it inherently belongs here. It has a place here, no matter how like ugly or cringy or scary. It's a fractal of something greater in the universe. And something I've heard you talk about a lot, which I deeply resonate with, is that life gets to be the practice. And that can seem daunting, or that can seem really exciting and expansive, because if you view all of reality moment to moment, no matter what you're doing, as a laboratory or a playground, like any trigger, any annoyance, any habit or pattern or whatever that comes up, you get to have this like expanded awareness of, whoa, this is a moment that's inviting me to more deeply see myself or more deeply become intimate with reality. And approaching life from that perspective makes it so much more fun, literally, no matter what you're doing.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Yeah. I like the word you chose, the laboratory. And I think people can really hear that. But it's more like, can we be adventurous? And I think that this comes back to what you said in the beginning, the lessons, not in the beginning, but some time ago, but the lessons that we can receive from the inner child is seeing things as an adventure. You know what I mean? Seeing things as like beginner's mind of like, wow, what is here for me? You know? But that requires so much space. And it's always that. It always comes back to just like, how much space can we create within us so that we're not hooked and identifying with what's happening, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, instead of seeing what's happening as part of the game, as part of the lab, as part of the practice.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say to anyone listening, I mean, I know you're also a seasoned practitioner, so everyone that's listening, this takes time, but it is possible, you know? Like, mm-hmm. I didn't feel like this 10 years ago. And there were parts of me that felt potential, which was the, like, what I kept holding on to. And then I was like, oh, and it keeps growing. Oh, and there's more to rely on. Oh, here's a real hold. Here's a real support. But in the beginning, it was like a little thread of a piece of thin, like, I'm like, yeah, I think there's something. It's like tiny 0.001%. And it's just like, oh, here it grows. So that's what the practice does. It helps us to stay, you know, to keep coming back to something that's really true. Mm-hmm. But there is a way. And I mean, it may not take as long as it did for us, for everyone. But I think it's important for people to remember that it does take time. And even that, even the journey itself is the practice. And it's here for a reason. Like, I know I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for everything that's happened up until now. And that's mm-hmm. messy. And it's hard. It's actually hard to accept, you know, because that also includes the death of my mom, which is like, why? You know, there's always a part of me kind of like protesting that, but couldn't I be here and her and she also being here? And if I can come into this part of me that accepts this mystery, but that is all working in some mysterious way for me, then I have to say, well, that's also part of the puzzle. Obviously, there's parts of me that will forever be protesting and wishing that wasn't here. So I get to tend to both of those. Like part of me that knows that there is some mysterious reason as to why this happened, and I can meet the grief and also meet the amount of love that I feel for her, for life, for this potential, and the depth of sadness that I never imagined possible. And at the same time, feel angry and resentful as to why the fuck haven't we figured out how to cure cancer? But that's not the main thing. It's not the only thing. I know that. So again, I think even grappling with this many contradicting ideas, narratives, parts is very difficult. And I know that, you know, and I think that's why sometimes it's easier for people to say, it's this, it's good, it's bad, I can do it, or yes, which is valid. But what if there is a way, you know? What if you could hold both? What if you could say, I'm okay and I'm sad?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love contradiction and paradox and nuance so much. And I'm glad you brought up grief, because that's another topic I really, really love so much. And it's so layered and nuanced. And to me, grief is like a huge ball of everything all at once. It's like brings you to the fucking depths of yourself and the human experience, and just strips you raw and brings you back to love. In my experience, it shows you in a really confronting and painful way the depth of love that exists within you. And however open you feel to sharing, when it comes to losing your mother and any other experiences of grief that you've had, what do you feel like that invited you into, and maybe what supported you in navigating that huge amount of grief?
You know, it's a big question, because it changes every single day.
I have to be
totally honest. You know, like, it's going to be in 12 days. It's actually going to be 1 year on December 25th. So to think back 1 year ago, I never thought I would have made it this far. I was just like, there's no way I will survive without her. And now to feel actually strong through feeling grief, sadness, anger, resentment, everything every day, which is essentially my practice, is what makes me stronger. And to also acknowledge that grief is not just my mother passed away. Like, grief is living. Like, every moment we are grieving something that is no longer here. Every moment we are grieving a dream that will not live. Every moment we are grieving a moment that has passed. You know, it'll never be this exact time ever again. Like, that is the deepest, truest aspect of being a human, that it is. We're dying every day. Something's being let go and released every day. And yet to feel the depth of grief, like you said, it comes from love. There isn't another way. Like, the depth of grief that I feel is solely because of the immense love that I feel endlessly for my mom, you know, and then, like, life-changing foundational relationship that we have. Sure, it is different now, but now through the feeling and through acknowledging grief and through allowing myself to feel completely devastated and to feel like there was no way and to feel like, you know, to just spend days and days in and days out just like crying and like actually contemplating what is the point of being here, allowing myself to go to those places. And, you know, again, I feel extremely, extremely grateful and blessed that I have had like incredible support this year. And I also have the flexibility of my work that I can choose when I work and I can make my schedule so that if I need to sleep or if I need to just take time. And that also pains me to think of people that have to go right back to work. They have to go right back to doing something or to sitting on a desk or to doing something or to taking care of another family member or to taking care of a child. Like, that, I think we're growing in that space to accept that, like, we need to give space to grief. We need to give space to feeling. And it comes back to what we said in the beginning. We're a bit scared as a society because it's so mysterious. It's like, how long? Well, I don't know, but at least a bare minimum of some time people do need, especially after like a big event, let's say the death of someone. But somehow, to come back to your actual question, I think I've had to just let myself feel completely out of control. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. To feel like I don't know. Like I just sit on my cushion and I'm like, I don't know when I'm going to stop crying. Or like, I don't know when I'm going to feel less angry. Or I don't know if I'll ever feel that kind of love again. It's like just being in that, like, I don't know, but still staying in that discomfort. Or like having a session with my mentor that for a whole 40 minutes, I'm just sobbing. And I'm like, I don't know how this is ever going to stop or what's going to happen. And to feel angry at the world, it's also okay. To feel angry at people mm-hmm. and to feel resentful at other women that are my mother's age and they're still around, or the people that have gone into remission, like to just allow myself to feel everything has been something that transformed this experience, you know, and feel everything. I mean, feel everything without an ounce of judgment, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I also think that there isn't a map, because everyone is so individual and everyone is so unique. The map is just like, go there, be the space around the feelings again, like reach out, let yourself feel held when you don't know even what you need, but just let people be there with you. Yeah. And it's so fascinating too, that there sometimes it's like less is more in these experiences. You know what I mean? Like less words from people is better. You know, like stop saying I'm sorry when someone dies, mm-hmm. or you know, just it's uncomfortable. And you can just say, well, this is really uncomfortable. I don't even know what to do. You can say that to yourself. Well, this feels very unbearable, but not deny it. You know, or hide from it. And like we said from the beginning, the muscle grows. This muscle to just, the space muscle, I guess you could say, mm-hmm. it expands. And then it's a new vocabulary. Again, you become more intimate with yourself. And then you learn a new vocabulary of how to be there with yourself. And now it feels miraculous that I'm literally talking to my mom all day. I'm feeling her love in every way. It's mm-hmm. it's mind blowing. You know, I'd say 3 months ago, I've had these dips, and like 3 months ago, I was just like, that's really it. I've come as far as I could, kind of done. You know, I was just like, what is the fucking point? I just went into a place and then, you know, process and practice and connection and remembering and also accepting that I am still here. I do have a life that I have to honor, you know, and I also do mm-hmm. have the gifts and the blessings that she's offered me that I must honor. So individually to what I'm experiencing now, I had to just let myself go there and be like, okay, I'm really done. Go to that corner, go to that edge as far as I could. And then to be like, oh, there is a way, you know? Yeah, so to feel her love, it's like the sun is shining and I walk outside. I'm like, oh, thank you, mom. You know, or to mm-hmm. like see love happening on the subway in a busy 9 a.m. morning. I'm like, oh, yes, hi, mom. You know, it's like that feels like, again, it doesn't make sense to the rational mind, but it is profound, and it's as real as anything else. And that has come from breaking completely, just like breaking down completely and having some kind of connection that it's not just here physically, to having her in my life, you know. And I'm so surprised that I've said all of this without one tear. Wow. I'm usually sobbing like 1 second into talking about her. So bless. Again, you know, you never know.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing. Wow. That's,
I know, I was like, where did I go?
So beautiful. And what I'm hearing and what I've experienced is that there's no prescription. There's no like step-by-step plan. And I think that might be one of the reasons why collectively we're so terrified of grief and of talking about death and the unknown, is because it's so unpredictable. And the first meditation retreat that I ever went on, a Buddhist nun was leading the retreat, and it was during my first like major dark night of the soul. Like, I was just fucking stripped and depressed and raw and tender and all of it. And every night we were able to ask her questions, and I asked her something about like, what is grief and what do I do? Like, tell me what to do. And her response was something along the lines of like relating to grief as these ocean waves. And at first, you're not even going to see the wave coming. It's going to be over your head. It's going to knock you over. You're going to feel like you're drowning. You don't know what way is up or down. You don't know what's what. And then slowly but surely over time, the wave comes again. Maybe you don't see it coming and it knocks you over. And then some more time goes on and maybe you do see the wave coming. It still knocks you over, but you're like, okay, I felt it coming. We're building a relationship. I know what the deal is. And then over time, it comes lower and lower and lower until maybe it's just at your ankles. Mm-hmm. And maybe it never goes away. Maybe that wave of grief is something that you're in relationship with for the rest of your life. But to me personally, the key to anything really is relationship and interconnectedness. Like, how can I be in relationship with this being, this entity of grief that's presenting itself in my life?
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, relating with what's there. Ooh, yeah. It's always at our ankles, the little waves. It's true. I love that imagery. Thank you, love.
Yeah. And if someone has someone in their life, whether it's a loved one or a friend, a partner who is going through a lot of grief, again, there's no like prescription, and everyone and every experience is so different. But do you have any pointers to like, how could someone best support someone that they love who is going through grief?
You know, I have found that through this whole year, the things that I remember the most from friends, it's not like never saying, like, maybe I'll say what things not to do. But I would say it's like,
perfect.
Don't do this, from my experience. Don't say, I'm sorry, this happened. Don't say the person is resting. Like, don't say stuff like that. Don't say she's at peace. You don't know. And it doesn't help the experience that the person that's still here is having. You know, don't say like, you will be okay. Just like be in the mud with them. Just like be in the discomfort. Like, my love, I'm here with you. Like, I'm just going to be here in this discomfort with you. And just be space. Just send a prayer in your mind and literally be a human living space, loving awareness with someone else there without needing to fix, which is our tendency as humans. Let me fix. Let me say this thing. Let me put it together. Let me put a band-aid. No, it's being the discomfort with someone else. Or just say, hey, I got you, you know, whatever you need. Or I'm by your side. Or I think it's more around, it really comes back to like, can I just be in that mud with you? You know, and can I just walk through the mud with you? I'll hold your hand, or like, I will be the tissues that you need when you're crying, or like lay on my lap. You know, I remember when I left when I left my last retreat, which I left a few days early because my mom had gone into surgery and was in a induced coma after she had pneumonia. One of my friends, who's a nun at the monastery, came into my room, and I didn't know, obviously, that she was going to pass, but I just felt like something huge is happening. Obviously, I felt it, and I knew somewhere in me. And this nun, who's a friend of mine, who is a legendary, incredible being, she just said, "You don't know what you're going to go through, but just know that I'm here with you." And just like grabbed me and laid me on her lap, and I just sobbed. And I was like, okay, that's right. I don't know, you don't know, but at least I know I'm not alone. That's the main thing. You know, we think we're alone, which we are to an extent. But to just know that even through that aloneness, someone else is there. Again, another contradiction, but true, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
My heart is feeling so much right now. I love that. Like, we tend to have this tendency of needing to fix something or make it better, but what would it look like to literally like pull up a seat in the darkness and just be a witness, just be a presence. And that's so innately healing. Yeah.
Yeah.
And one of the final questions I want to ask you, I've noticed that throughout the conversation, you bring up the word space a lot, which is a word that I really love, just creating more spaciousness within. What does that mean to you, like to be the space or to feel more spaciousness within yourself?
Yeah, I feel like it's really giving space to recognize that the space is the potential. Is our inherent potential. You know, it's like using that perfect, endlessly perfect quote from Pema Chodron: "You are the sky, everything else is just the weather." Really, the sky is the spacious around the weather, the clouds that are always passing. And when we think about on a more physiological way, it's like creating space to balance your nervous system, creating space to be aware of your thoughts as they're happening instead of think you are the thoughts, to be aware of how you are reacting. It's like we do need literal space to breathe deeper, to be able to respond. So space, not just in the physical literal sense, like imagine you're in a crowded room, you feel like, oh my God, there's no space, I can't breathe, I'm crowded. But if there's literal space around you, it's the same thing inside. And on a more like spiritual way, I also feel that space feels like the loving awareness, the true potential that is our essence, and everything else is what comes and goes. You know, it is that, it is what's beneath and around everything. And the stuff, the personality, the conditioning, the fears, the doubts, the reactions is what's passing and what's changeable, even though we think it's stuck. Mm-hmm. What can be worked with, and it is malleable, but the space, the loving awareness potential that's always around, is never phased no matter what happens. I think that's something we always forget. I mean, most people don't even know, which is something that, you know, we're working on as a society, but remembering that the space is there. It's like, it's almost like also accepting that the cycles of nature happen, you know, and then nature keeps going. So we accept, oh, the space is there, the loving awareness is there, the true essence potential of who we are is there. It's the foundation, you know, it's like the core of who we are, and everything that comes and goes is a personality and is what comes and changes. And I also think another way to tap into that potential is to also see how far you have come. It's like you wouldn't, like every human right now alive on earth at this moment wouldn't be here if there wasn't an ounce, at least, of awareness of their own potential for them to get through everything that they have had to go through. You know, we have all survived everything we've gone through, hence we are still here. That's kind of an actual fact. You're alive right now, you've survived everything. And I also see this as like, it's almost like you're in the clutter, you're in the tight, you're in the stuff. And then you begin to realize there's space. And then the more you realize there's space, the more, quote unquote, the space grows. But it's not. The space has always been there. You just become more aware of the actual space by becoming aware of the space, of the potential. So as everything, it's exercising the actual qualities that are always there, that they grow and that they become less dormant and more revealed.
Ooh, so good. Yeah, the visual that comes up as you're speaking is like, there are constantly these radio signals around us at all times. And which one do you want to tune into? Mm-hmm. Like, whether you're aware of it or not, that spaciousness, that presence, that love, whatever you want to tap into, it's here. Mm-hmm. Bring your awareness to it and tap mm-hmm. into it.
Yeah. I mean, that's why the attention is truly our most powerful tool. Bring your attention to what you want. Mm-hmm. And bring your attention to your potential. It's like you have that power. You just have to get the wheel back from the conditioning, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So to wrap up, if you had a billboard that millions of people could see, what would you put on it? Or final words that you would want to scream from the rooftops? No pressure.
I really think that it would be something like, you are already enough. Mm. And worthy and capable, like you are already that, you know. You don't need to do anything to realize that. It's like less is actually more in that sense, that we are already that, we are already enough, worthy and capable. Yeah.
I feel my whole body softening as you say that. Thank you for that. And if people want to work with you and play in your world, how can they find you and have more of you?
Yes,
what you got going on?
We have the Modern Dakini House, which is an online membership for women, for self-liberation, for practices, connection, community. And we meet 4 times a month, every month. This month, which is December, the topic is Divine Pride and Your Manifesto. So it's very exciting. I'm really thrilled about that. I also teach in person in New York City, a Sage and Sound in the Upper East Side. And one-on-one coaching, there are some spaces opening up, and I think that's it right now. You know, I'm planning a retreat for the summer, but it's still in the works, so more details to come, but those are the ways right now for sure. Yeah. And on Instagram, you know, I share a lot there, mm-hmm. you know, often tools and little tips and stories, so there's always something going on there as well.
Beautiful. And for everyone listening, I'm going to put all those links in the show notes so that you can check out more of Moon's wisdom. And I just want to celebrate you. Like, thank you so much for your wisdom. Thank you for all of the inner work that you've done and for the true, true, true medicine and magic and love that you're sharing with the world. It doesn't go unnoticed.
Oh, thank you, my love. Thank you. And thanks for having me. I loved this conversation. So thank you so, so much.
Thank you so much for listening to The Sensuous, the home for real, raw conversations about sex, love, relationships, power, somatic healing, spirituality, and fully owning our human experiences. The absolute best way to stay connected and receive the most powerful teachings and offerings is by heading to bloomwithnadine.com/newsletter to sign up for my email list. It's also incredibly supportive if you take a minute to tap the follow button and leave a rating and written review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. This really helps more beautiful souls like yourself discover this content. If you resonated with the episode, definitely make sure to share it on your social media and tag me at Bloom with Nadine. Send it along to your friends, lovers, and family, and keep listening to more episodes. Let's spread the word about these taboo yet essential discussions. I love and appreciate you so very deeply, and I'm celebrating you for making it to the very end of a podcast episode. Congratulations. I hope you do something to honor your inner sensuous creature today. Thank you for being here.